Which aspiring Caesar will rue the Ides of March? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Okay, this is it's a good day today. We are sitting in the new house. We're recording in the new house. And are we moved in yet? No, we're not fully moved in yet. But we're sitting here, my wife and I haven't coming over. We're camping out on the floor of our bedroom on air mattresses so we can get some work done over here so we can actually move in. So, yeah, we're having a good day today. And it's we're actually recording this pretty late on a Friday. So
it's as fresh as we can possibly make
that's
it.
That's right. You're getting it. And by the time you hear it, it'll be just over 24 hours old. So it is fresh, fresh, fresh.
And we know, Chuck, that most of our listeners are saying to themselves, yeah, and any time I hear you, it seems to be over 24 hours old. In other words, you're not very fresh.
Yeah, exactly. He said, you guys, well, actually, they tell us that we are very fresh, and they'd like to give us a slap, but for being so fresh. Sorry, we're on the radio, and you can't slap us.
So there you go. Bad. That's it.
That's right.
Well, Chuck, you know what? It's amazing here because here we are sitting at basically the end of February. And I don't know about you, but, you know, Ohio weather being what it is, you know, we've had everything from 70 degree days to sub-zero temperatures all in the swing of less than a week.
That's right. Well, we haven't been
I sit here in my home office studio with a big flannel jacket on because it got really cold last night.
Yep. Yep, it sure did. I had to get up and stoke the fire in the hot blast stove to make sure that the bedroom stayed warm.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, Chuck, that's just the way it is this time of year. And honestly, with the warm weather we had, there were some people other than our kids who really, really enjoyed that warm weather. And that would be all of the candidates and their hangers-on who are out there stumping in Ohio right now. Because, as you know, Chuck, that this coming Tuesday on the 1st of March is the Super Tuesday primaries for the GOP presidential nomination cycle for 2016. That's the big swing through the southern states. And so I'm guessing that most of the candidates and their helpers are hoping that in the southern states the day of the polls next week will not show torrential downpours or tornadoes or other things that the South has been experiencing because of these wild weather swings. But, you know, that's okay because after that they can roll on up into the Midwest and come into Ohio in March. And I think it's fitting, Chuck, as I looked over this, it really hadn't occurred to me this morning, and part of the reason for our opening tagger is that Ohio's primary is on the 15th of March, which we have commonly called the Ides of March. Why? Well, it's related to the idea based on when Julius Caesar was dispatched.
Yeah, the Ides of March, the Roman calendar was odd. A month ran from day 1 to day 15 and then counted backwards. 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9. So the Ides was the day that the calendar flipped backwards.
Aha.
So the Ides of March is the day that Julius Caesar was murdered in the Roman Senate by the senators who were afraid. He had essentially been named dictator for life. He is commonly referred to as the first Roman emperor. He really wasn't a Roman emperor, but he's counted on the list. He had been named. Rome had a really weird system wherein if there was an emergency, a military emergency or some kind of an emergency, you know, civil unrest, that kind of thing, you could be named dictator for a period. A Roman leader, usually a military leader, was named dictator for a period. And usually, if I remember, my memory may be really bad on this, it's either 6 months or a year that you could be named dictator.
And right. I think it was a 6 month term.
I think that's correct. During that period, you basically had absolute control with the backing of the Senate. And you could do anything. Well, I believe Caesar had been named dictator for life, and people who were attempting to keep the republic intact, realizing that Rome was heading away from being a republican form of government into an empire, people that were attempting to keep the republic intact, he came in to speak in the Senate, and they gathered around him and stabbed him to death in an attempt to keep the republic intact. Well, it had the opposite effect. Unfortunately, it had the opposite effect, and Rome became an empire under Caesar's nephew, and that was Augustus.
Yes. Well, Chuck, you know, you hit on it right there, that whole concept of we try to do this to keep the republic intact. And that's what the GOP is looking at right now when it comes to the basically the primary season, the nomination process season. And I believe by the time we get to the Ides of March here in Ohio, who that's our day for our primary, that the GOP especially is going to be in full freakout mode trying to save their republic, i.e. the GOP establishment party structure, from the attacks by what they consider to be a Brutus. And I'll let you pick that one. If you're a Trump supporter, then yes, Donald Trump would be that Brutus. And if you're a Ted Cruz supporter, Ted Cruz would be that Brutus to the party. Because the establishment right now, Chuck, is absolutely apoplectic because nothing they're doing is sticking. Their show horse, Jeb Bush, couldn't even make it to Super Tuesday and has since dropped out of the race. Now, folks, just to keep you updated because we've been doing this, we are now down to, well, basically five major nominees for the presidential Republican presidential nomination. The front runner, obviously, is Donald Trump for some inexplicably crazy reason. He's leading in just about every state, including Ohio, I have to say. Coming in second, it depends on who you talk to. It's either Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, or it's Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida. The GOP would be hoping it's Rubio. Although I'm not sure, Chuck, other than, you know, the limping, slouching toward Gomorrah, as Robert Bork used to call it in the title of his book.
Yeah.
And the limping toward Cleveland for the Republican convention in July, Marco Rubio, really, I'm not sure why there are so many people coalescing around Marco Rubio, except for the fact that he's the last best hope for the establishment control of the GOP. But you know what? Marco Rubio has not won a single primary yet, and it is very fairly clear that he will not be even winning his home state of Florida.
Well, he hasn't done better than third in all of them but one.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, and it's arguable that his second place finish that he supposedly had in South Carolina was by 0.2 percentage point, Chuck.
Oh, right.
Which means there was only a small handful of votes between him and Ted Cruz. Now, Cruz is out there campaigning, saying that at least he has actually beaten Donald Trump in a primary, which was the Iowa caucuses. Cruz had great organization out there, and he actually came in first place, and he's the only candidate so far to be able to knock the Donald out of his seat and tell him you're fired, at least in one caucus.
Well, okay, I'm going to go a little deeper for a second.
Oh, please. I'm just dancing along the surface here. There's so much to talk about.
There is so much to talk about. But think about this. The combined efforts of Kasich and Rubio, who are really the only serious establishment candidates left, and let's put it this, Kasich's out there basically desperately trying for a vice presidential bid, which he's not going to get.
No, Chuck, he's changed his mind on that again. You know,
well,
he was running for president before he was only really running for vice president before he was, just kidding, I'm really running for president.
Yeah, Barry, and I talked about this before the election cycle even started, that basically when Kasich was making noises, we both said, he's running for vice president.
Oh, absolutely, because there was no plausible path for someone who wants to say he's a conservative but wants to campaign like a moderate and who actually governs like a center leftist to actually get a Republican nomination in a conservative Republican environment. They put all their eggs in the basket that they got to win New Hampshire. They got to win New Hampshire. Well, he came in a very distant second in New Hampshire. And so now it's like, well, we're putting all our eggs in the basket of Michigan now. And it's like, well, it's funny. You're not talking about Ohio, and you're not even saying, well, you know, we're pretty confident about Ohio, because you can't be confident about Ohio, because depending on which poll you look at, John Kasich in his own home state is either in second or third place.
And that's what I was going to say. He's either in second or third place in his home state, which means, folks, despite the fact that yes, he was handily reelected, there's a reason for that. His opponent was so unbearably awful that I don't see how he couldn't possibly have beaten him. Had John Kasich possibly been caught with the money from a bank robbery and the dye pack exploded all over him, he might have continued to be reelected because his opponent was so awful.
Absolutely. And honestly, Chuck, there are some who think that that actually was handed to him.
Yes.
You know, for some of the lovely things that the municipality of Cleveland had received from the state's budget over the 3 years before John Kasich ran for re-election.
You we'll give you Ed Fitzgerald if you give us this money.
Well, now, we're not saying that directly. I mean, obviously, there's no way you can document anything like that. But it did seem awfully strange that the Democratic Party, who has, you know, let's just be honest, they've got some seriously committed elected officials and people who could be good candidates, who could really, you know, the problem is that under their previous leadership, Chris Redfern, who is the former state party chairman, they really didn't pick those people.
No,
they basically
didn't.
It's just like the GOPE. It was the who's loyal and who can I do favors for, or who can do favors for me, and that's who got elevated by their state central committee to be their statewide candidates. Well, and of course, Ed Fitzgerald happened to be, probably the biggest joke. I mean, he starts with picking a running mate who immediately has legal issues and tax issues.
Yep.
That he has to drop. Then he picks up another VP, or not VP, but excuse me, lieutenant governor candidate. I'm still thinking presidential.
You're thinking,
here,
yeah. You're...
Who actually nobody has ever heard of before, and who's probably one of the most strident pro-aborts out there. And then Fitzgerald gets himself, tangled up. I guess he was on the wrong side of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, because they seem to take quite a bit of mirth in reporting all of his improprieties, including his not holding a driver's license for a number of years.
10 years. 10 years.
And obviously that's clear, Chuck, because he couldn't figure that you can't drive a car with the engine off in the back seat with a woman in the middle of a parking lot in an industrial zone at 4 o'clock in the morning.
A delegate from an Irish business delegation, no less.
Exactly.
It was, this isn't really where I was going, but we're now giving you our conspiracy theory analysis of the Ohio election. Yeah. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, if you think that sounded a little conspiratorial, no, I don't really think that necessarily the Cleveland Democratic Party. I mean, that's the best. Everybody looked at the job and said, I don't want to run for that.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's really what happened. And Ed Fitzgerald, they say, OK, come be a placeholder. OK, fine. I'll come and do that. And really, it's not unprecedented. Remember Tim Hagen?
Yes.
Tim Hagen, another Cuyahoga County executive.
Yep.
Who got steamrolled when he ran. He was going to be the big savior, and he wasn't the savior. Now, going back to my original point, when we got off on the tangent of John Kasich running for vice president, if you look at the number of votes of the candidates who are anti-establishment, Cruz, Trump, Carson, to some extent, Fiorina, to some extent, some of the others.
She's
out.
I was going to say.
But up to that point, it hugely outweighs the establishment candidates. Hugely outweighs. And the total number of votes cast in favor of the rebel candidates versus the establishment candidates is overwhelming. So what we're getting is, We keep getting these things. Well, the savior of the party is going to be Marco Rubio. Now, if you'll recall, I've been saying all along that Jeb was getting swept under the rug in favor of Rubio.
You're right.
I said if Jeb gets swept out, and I have thought for a long time, I said I think Jeb's done, put a fork in him. It's going to, the establishment guy's going to be Rubio. They tried Kasich out, and he couldn't keep his foot out of his mouth. And therefore, they put all their eggs in the Rubio basket. That's who they're looking for. When we go to a convention, and don't kid yourself, this is going to be a brokered convention, because while the Republican setup for delegates is similar to the Democrats, it's not the same. Basically, they've got theirs rigged up, so it looks like the party grassroots are in control, but really the party regulars are in control there. This is why Hillary is walking away after getting steamrolled in New Hampshire, why she walked away with the same number of delegates that Sanders had. Because the superdelegates were pledged to her to start with, because they're the party regulars, the party establishment. This is really why, and Sanders has had no chance all along. Republicans have kind of the same deal. There are superdelegates. There are people. There are pledged seats that don't necessarily go to, that aren't on the slate. Let's put it that way. But it's not anywhere near as many as in the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party, this has been running this way in the Democratic Party since George McGovern. Barry, that's
true.
44 years ago.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
That's 11 presidential cycles ago. That's how long, and now all of a sudden it's coming to the forefront because there's a revolt, and there's a revolt in both parties. Now, the Democrats, or the Republicans, have always been based on how much money you could raise from kingmakers like Sheldon Adelson. Well, who monkey wrenched it? Donald Trump. Why? He doesn't need their money. In fact, Donald Trump hasn't spent very much on his campaign at all. Because all he has to do is stand in a room and the press reports it.
Exactly. He hasn't had to pay for much media at all.
Donald Trump ate a popsicle. Oh, Trump mm-hmm. had a popsicle. What does this portend? You know, you'll get an analysis. He ate it evilly, basically, from the left. And the pundits on the left are just apoplectic over Trump. Seriously, I mean, there was a story yesterday that they're starting to joke about assassination attempts on Donald Trump. I mean, can you believe this, Barry? If a quote-unquote right-wing journalist said something about an assassination attempt against a Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, what would happen? That guy would be hounded out of his job within 24 hours.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
So, I mean, you've got all kinds of strange things going on both sides. I mean, I'm looking at Glenn Beck talking about fasting for Ted Cruz, and that Antonin Scalia died. God took him to heaven because, so he could get Ted Cruz elected. What?
Yep.
Now, when God takes someone, first of all, Antonin Scalia was 79 years old. With some serious health problems, you know, and all of a sudden there's this massive conspiracy. I got to laugh about this. He spent his last hours with in a secret elite hunting society. Have you seen that headline?
Yes, I saw that. Yes, that's the Society of St. Hubertus.
Yeah. It's a bunch of European stag hunters, basically. They go out and they hunt deer. And that's exactly right. What they were doing. They were at a hunting lodge hunting deer. This super elite secret hunting society that excludes women. Well, first of all, sure, there are lots of women that like to hunt deer, Sarah Palin being one. But there are a lot of men who like to club up and go drink whiskey and play cards and hunt deer.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me think. Playing cards, yeah, drinking scotch. Hunting deer,
scotch.
Oh, absolutely.
Scotch, yeah, I'm with you, scotch, yeah.
on the other side of that coin, you'll smoke
the cigars, I won't.
Now, on the other side of that coin, too, I don't feel like running off to some place in Texas and spending a lot of money on a basically a country club type environment to go hunt caged deer. I like just crawling up into my own woods here with my bow and taking one out. But that's the difference between, you know, those who have those networks and access and those who don't.
Yeah, well, I'll have to have you come out and inspect the deer stand we found out in my woods here that's 20 feet up. So.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'll take a look at that for you. Not a problem.
I think it needs some remediation before it gets used.
Well, they probably all need a little bit if it's been out there for a while. But anyhow, kind of going back to looking at this, but, you know, again, March 15th is the Ohio primary. And, yes, the GOPE is hoping for the Ides of March to happen because they're hoping for either Rubio or Kasich to catch fire enough to actually beat Donald Trump in a state. But the only state it looks like Donald Trump is losing in right now is Texas, and that's because that's Ted Cruz's home state.
Right.
And Ted is basically, last poll I saw, Ted Cruz had, it looked like to be about a 12-point lead on Trump in Texas. And that probably will stand, you know, it'll probably narrow, but it'll probably stand up. But really, when it gets right down to it, Chuck, the Ohio might actually become the Ides of March for more than one candidate. You might actually see, by the time we get to Ohio's primary and the results of Ohio's primary, guys like Ben Carson and John Kasich dropping out of the race. Because, honestly, if Kasich can't win Ohio outright, then the best he can do is trying to broker a VP slot. And the only way he's going to be able to do that at that point, if Donald Trump is still the front runner, is if he gets out and throws his support behind Trump. Now, I thought this was interesting, Chuck, because you and I talked about this, I think, on our last program, that another candidate who got out of the race, and of course, this is what happens, ladies and gentlemen, you know, whether you supported these particular candidates or not, I hope that you're still paying attention to what they're doing, because it speaks volumes to their character. You know, because Rick Santorum, you know, he was pushing, he wanted to be president, he was out there, he was trying to raise money, and he was meeting people, and he was going there, he was going to be on the ballot, and because, you know, principles and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, who, when he finally realized that he was wasting his time and other people's money, dropped out of the race and immediately ran to endorse Marco Rubio.
Yeah.
One of the key establishment players, which tells you, you know, Chuck, you and I have had this conversation for years about Santorum being willing to basically throw every principle he ever believed in on the altar of expediency and would do whatever the establishment told him to do if he thought it meant getting a position. Look at his history with endorsing Arlen Specter, Christy Todd Whitman when George Bush wanted him to, and now look at him running headlong into the arms of someone who supposedly is, you know, somebody he was standing fighting against because they were part of the establishment. The other candidate who did this, who's done something a little bit more cagey, Chuck, which isn't fitting with the character that we've come to observe from him, is Mike Huckabee, who was also running to, you know, get consideration and had been even before the first, you know, primaries opened and people were, because Mike's been campaigning for like the last 3 years to try to get even conservatives and evangelicals to support a bid for presidency for him. Didn't work. Mike never broke above, I think, 2 or 2.5% anywhere. And he finally, you know, realized that he couldn't actually make it on his own. So he dropped out. Now, what did he do? He immediately ran and appeared at a Donald Trump rally. But he's been cagey about it. I haven't endorsed Donald Trump. I haven't endorsed Donald Trump. Well, lo and behold, Charles, a news item just came out yesterday. Guess who just got named as a senior strategy advisor for the Donald Trump campaign?
Well, gosh, could it be?
Mike Huckabee's daughter, who ran his presidential campaign.
Okay.
Yeah, you thought it was going to be Huckabee. No. See, again, Huckabee's cagey. He's got his daughter now working as like one of the top advisors for Donald Trump. Why? Because if she does a great job, maybe daddy will get the nod for Donald's VP. and again, folks, if you like Mike Huckabee, I that's fine. You can like him. I you know what? Knowing politics the way I do, and knowing history, and seeing records and seeing personalities, I'm sorry, but this is Mike Huckabee to a T.
Oh, absolutely.
He has, and folks, it doesn't matter that Donald Trump has given money to pro-aborts. It doesn't matter that he said Planned Parenthood does great things, and Cecile Richards, the president of Planned Parenthood, has publicly lauded Donald Trump for recognizing the valuable contribution Planned Parenthood makes to the culture. It doesn't matter that he said his sister, who is an ultra-liberal federal judge, would be a great Supreme Court pick. Of course, she's so liberal, Chuck, that she even believes that the partial birth abortion ban shouldn't be in place. But Mike Huckabee is now basically courtiering Donald Trump. He has come up into the shadow of greatness, and he wants some of it. He wants to be the Trumpster's VP. And so he's put his daughter in a position where she can help Donald and Donald can help him.
Yeah.
And if you think that's conspiratorial, ladies and gentlemen, go ahead and send us an email. You know, I'll engage with you on this. But having seen the history of Mike Huckabee and knowing some backroom stuff that has been happening around what Mike Huckabee's been trying to do, this one was not a surprise whatsoever. He is being extremely careful because he knows if he comes out personally and endorses Donald Trump, he's going to lose a lot of evangelical support. However, if Donald Trump picks him, he can make the argument that he's going to be bringing a moral sense to the campaign, and he can be there to help make sure that policies are going to be pro-family. Just like he did in Arkansas. Right, Chuck?
Well, look, Huckabee, there's a reason why Mike Huckabee is known as Tax Hike Mike.
Oh, yes.
Because in Arkansas, when he left, the tax burden was hugely increased under Mike Huckabee. But by gosh, he quote unquote fixed all these problems. Well, he's a tax and spender. He's a big government, quote unquote, big government conservative. And as you're well aware, we don't think there is any such thing. You can't be a big government guy.
Yeah, that really doesn't exist.
Yeah, right. this is a non-existent entity. But Mike Huckabee is a big government conservative. He was playing the John Kasich game before John Kasich was the quote unquote compassionate conservative, the George W. Bush thing. In other words, he was all about increasing welfare spending while cutting taxes, supposedly, except that George W. Bush didn't really. Yeah, there were Bush tax cuts, but that, as always happens, there were rises in other places. The Newt Gingrich thing. These aren't taxes; these are fees.
Oh yes, of course. But anyhow, so Mike is out, but he's trying to get back in, and just like Santorum is out, but he's trying to get back in. Which actually, you know, Chuck, gives me a whole lot more respect for guys like Rick Perry, Bobby Jindal, and Scott Walker, who got out and stayed out. When you've got these guys here and they're running and, you know, and I've got to stand and all these other guys are bad and I'm the best, but then when they fold, they immediately run to one of the other guys that they were bashing in order to curry favor with them. That says a lot about an individual's character, and it also says a lot about their priorities and their principles. And obviously, the priority and principle for Mike Huckabee and Santorum is staying alive politically.
Yeah.
And they think their best opportunity to stay alive politically is to hook their wagon to the horse team that is either Marco Rubio's campaign or Donald Trump's campaign. And I'd say Mike Huckabee has done a much better job of silently hooking up his wagon to Donald Trump than Rick Santorum did of hooking his wagon to Marco Rubio.
Well, let's put it this way, though. Let's give Santorum points for at least being honest about what he was doing.
Exactly. He actually came out and endorsed Rubio, whereas yeah. Huckabee has been very coy about it since the get-go.
Huckabee is doing it by proxy.
Yes, exactly. Which honestly ought to give a lot of pause to Huckabee aficionados and supporters.
Exactly.
That you're really now starting to see that Mike Huckabee's a bit more Machiavellian than you probably would have given him credit for.
Well, I would have given him credit.
No,
for
No, not or, that you, the general evangelical who thinks Mike Huckabee's a nice guy. Honestly, I don't see it. So, yeah. But anyhow, they're out trying to get back in, and then there are those who are in and should be getting out, and that's Ben Carson. Who, yeah. Honestly, frankly, though, I got to give Carson some chops. You know, I got to give him some kudos for this. He's got chops. He's sticking in. He's, you know, he's creating problems. And the person he's creating the most problem for right now, Chuck, is John Kasich, because Kasich lost to Ben Carson in the Nevada caucuses, which is hilarious, considering that Ben Carson didn't really do anything in the Nevada caucuses. And Kasich is you know, out there talking about, you know, oh, we got to do this. We're going to swing through the South. And, you know, he spent more time on the campaign trail in the last 6 months than he spent at home in Ohio, even to the point, Chuck, that he snuck back into Ohio on a Sunday to quietly sign a bill that basically would divert money away from Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers. I'll give credit to the governor. He did come out of his way to come back to Ohio to sign a bill, which got delayed because he was on the campaign trail. It could have been done a month ago. Actually, could have been done a long time ago if he had done this by executive order, but he can't seem to quite do that, because then the responsibility would be on his shoulders if his moderate to liberal supporters in New Hampshire and other places kind of started beating up on him for being too pro-life. Which is a claim that I'll never make for John Kasich.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. As opposed to some of the rhetoric that's out there right now from a certain pro-life organization acting like he's the greatest thing since sliced bread for the pro-life movement. Folks, he really hasn't led on anything. All of he's done is sign bills. You've got pro-life leaders in the legislature who are introducing bills and putting them forward. Those things have never been part of his packages for budgets, things of that. Come on, let's be honest with you. Why should he get all the credit for just doing his job, Chuck, which is signing bills that the legislature sends to him? He didn't even have to do that. He could have let this one go into law without his signature, because hey, if it goes 10 days and he hasn't signed it, it goes into law. He's got three options. He can sign a bill, he can veto a bill, or he can just let it go into law without his signature. But, you know, we waited until after he got out of New Hampshire to pass the bill, and then waited until after the South Carolina primary, when I obviously didn't help him that much. Then he quietly signed the bill as he's moving into the Super Tuesday states.
Well,
now, you know, some people would say, well, that's just being so uncharitable and unchristian that you're saying that there's actually political calculations behind this. Folks, yes, there's political calculations behind this. Everything that has been happening in Ohio government for the last 2 years have been completely centered around John Kasich running for president. Every last bit of it. You take a look.
Oh, yeah.
It's just not funny. But you know what? The Ides of March may be upon John Kasich, too. Because if he can't win Ohio, and if he doesn't show well in any of the Super Tuesday states... And, Chuck, I just sent you by email, as we're talking here, a link to an article from Breitbart, which is basically their tracker. They do like an update tracker over the last few days of the campaign. And there's a picture about halfway down the page that was taken on Wednesday in the evening in Metairie, Louisiana, where John Kasich is stumping, because Louisiana is one of the caucus states in Super Tuesday. And there's this great picture of this, looks like huge crowd with all these big cameras, and John, you can see in the distance John Kasich up on the stage. And Chuck, I sent you that picture, and I hope we link to this, and folks get to see this photo on our website. Pay careful attention, because if you just take a look at the picture, it looks like that's a lot of support for John Kasich. Me, I started taking a very close look at the picture. If you look at the way this picture, you can look off to one side and you can realize that what they've done is they've crunched chairs into the middle of the room. And if you're careful, you can count that there's only four rows of nine chairs, which means there's only about 35 people in this crowd. And they've squeezed it all together in this big, what you know, looks like a hotel banquet room, because you can see like the partition thing. They made it so it looks really big, but what they've done is, and if you look very carefully, a lot of the campaign folks are up around the stage, and they've got like some, you know, prop people setting up on the stage to make the room look hugely full. But Chuck, if there's 50 people in this room, then I'm being generous.
Well,
The photo is staged in such a way, and the way they set the room up was if a camera had to, you know, shoot John Kasich directly, they had to shoot to make it look like this room was packed with people.
And that's kind of a common thing. Hillary Clinton's run into a lot of that, playing to empty venues, and yet the press snaps a picture that, I think I see the one, it's an NBC News picture.
This was actually a photo. If you scroll down, like I said, it's about halfway down that article I sent over to you. It's a photo by somebody named Kailani Koenig on her Twitter feed, which they've, you know, Breitbart has captured. It's showing this picture. But then you scroll down a couple, and then there's a picture of Marco Rubio, also in a hotel banquet room, you can tell. But the stage is much wider across in the back, and, you know, and it looks like this room is full of people. But, you know, if you're careful about it, you understand what they've done is they've got there's probably a cordon line far enough back off the front of the stage that if people come up toward the front of the cordon line, it looks like it's full all the way to the stage, but there's probably this huge gap, and there's probably half as many people in that room as what it looks like. It's just, you know, these are the type of things the candidates do when they are trying to create this illusion of massive levels of support for their campaigns. You know, the only candidates that I've seen so far that haven't had to do that, Chuck, are Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Who, when they shoot photos of those guys, they shoot it from the back of the stage over the candidate's shoulder, looking out upon crowds of thousands.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Thousands. And I'm not kidding you, ladies and gentlemen. There's the difference. You know when a campaign is doing well or doing poorly by where they place their cameras. You know, if they place it on stage behind or off to the side of the candidate so that they can capture the candidate and the crowd, then you know that candidate's getting lots of support. If they are out in behind the crowd shooting toward the candidate, be careful when you look at the photos, because 9 times out of 10, they are strategically crafted to make it look like there's more support and more enthusiasm and more momentum and more energy in that candidate's campaign in that room than there really is.
Barry, I've seen this technique used by journalists who are trying to gin up the idea that you know, something is far more popular, or there's a lot more, you know, people support behind it than there is. I've seen pictures of, for instance, protesters on the Supreme Court steps or on the steps of. I was at an event once where there was a counter protest in the back, and I saw the pictures that were being taken and run by news services. There were about 300 people at this thing. There were 30,000 people on my side in the front, and there were about 300 counter protesters in the back. Well, they did their best to make it look like there were thousands of people in this crowd by cramming everybody together.
Yes.
And taking a shot that only showed all the people all crammed together. So it looked like everybody was shoulder to shoulder, and that there was this huge support. It's an old technique, and it's a propaganda technique. And it's not shocking. I now see the picture you're talking about.
Yes.
And we will link to that.
Yes. And again, I want people to pay careful attention. When you look at photos, first ask yourself, the first question is, where was this taken from? Was it taken from the crowd toward the candidate, or was it taken from the candidate toward the crowd? That kind of gives you an indicator. And then look carefully at how the photo is set up. Like I said, in that Kasich one, it's very clear. You can see, if you look off to that right side, you see an awful lot of empty floor of that banquet floor room off to the side of that cameraman. And then if you're careful and you count the number of chair backs and you look off to the left side, you can also see a lot of floor just beyond that last row of chair backs. And you can count, there's only 9 across. And I got to thinking, I was like, well, maybe, you know, there's like 50 or 60 people. And then I started counting, and the best I could come up with is 4 rows of 9 chairs that was all jammed in together, and then a bunch of Team Kasich, you know, volunteers and his people who travel, his entourage that travels with him, his coterie, I suppose you could call it, all jammed up around the front of the corner of the stage to make the room look like it's much more full than what it is.
Yeah. Again, an old technique, and if you got a cooperative news type person,
you don't even have to have a campaign news staffer. Person. Yeah. What you need is somebody on your campaign who's pumping out the photos for you on their Twitter feed or on Facebook. And you force the media to set their cameras up in a way where they have to, it makes it look like there's a big crowd there.
Yep, exactly. And it's not shocking that, you know, Kasich is desperate to get something that looks like support, because the guy's just really not doing very well at all.
No, when you lose to Ben Carson in Nevada, when you basically are sitting in second or third place, depending on what poll you look at, in your own home state, and when you're basically saying that your campaign turns on how well you do in Michigan.
Yeah.
After saying that your campaign was being made or broken by winning New Hampshire, which you didn't do, we're just looking for an excuse for our highly paid consultants like John Weaver to basically rake in a few more $100,000 and, for us to limp through. And honestly, Chuck, when it gets right down to it, is Casey, does he really want to be president? Of course he does. Of course he does.
Yeah.
Is there any legitimate pathway to him getting there during the 2016 presidential election cycle? No, there's not. There is no real way. So is he running for BP slot? Well, he's first of all said, although he can backtrack on this, Chuck, and I'm sure he will, that he wouldn't accept a VP. You know, that he wasn't running for vice president. Although last week he came out and said something where he said, "Well, I'm not really running for president now." And it's like, okay, you know, that was Kasich in maybe an unguarded moment, but then he turned around later and recanted that. Because that's a good way to kill your support in your volunteer base. Is to basically say, okay, guys, the jig's really up, but I'm just going to be like, treading water here until we can get to the convention. But honestly, Chuck, something else came out the other day, and I didn't send this over to you, and I should. But it was an article in the Plain Dealer, of all places, where our state treasurer, Josh Mandel, who, for purposes of full disclosure, has backed and endorsed Marco Rubio since before the first primary ever happened. I mean, last summer, Mandel was going out there backing Marco Rubio. Why? Because Rubio backed Mandel in his run for the United States Senate against Sherrod Brown and was one of the early adopters of supporting of Josh Mandel. So it was interesting because, and I believe this was, it could have been yesterday, it could have been the day before, but the Cleveland Plain Dealer had an article where basically Mandel didn't believe that John Kasich is going to make it to the convention, which means that, you know, he's fairly politically adept. But the other problem is, and this is interesting because I want folks to start paying a weather eye to the interaction between John Kasich and Josh Mandel, because what you're seeing, folks, is the oncoming storm of another primary. But this one will be a primary in the Ohio GOP to determine who gets to run against Sherrod Brown for the United States Senate in two more years in 2018. Josh Mandel is most likely going to try a run again, even though Brown beat him the first time. John Kasich is 90% going to try to run, especially if he does not get a VP nod. And right now, folks, Kasich is not endearing himself to either the Trump or the Cruz campaign. And so if either one of those two gentlemen come out as the nominee, I don't really believe John Kasich has any pathway to getting a VP nod. If he doesn't win Ohio, he can't use it to broker at the convention or to horse trade. And he certainly hasn't got enough strength anywhere else or brings enough to a ticket to make that kind of a deal palatable or attractive to whoever the nominee is, unless, of course, it might be Marco Rubio. But then again, if Josh Mandel is such a deeply devoted endorser and supporter of Marco Rubio, do you really think Marco Rubio is going to pick John Kasich to be VP? Well, he could, because then that gets him out of the way for Josh to run for the United States Senate. And everybody may think, well, yeah, boy, you're really into conspiracy theory today. Well, no, I'm just looking at the tea leaves, ladies and gentlemen. And Chuck, you can verify, most of the time when we look at the tea leaves, we usually see the picture fairly clearly.
Oh, well, that's the way politics gets played. This is not conspiracy. This is maneuvering before a senatorial race, and that is not conspiratorial in the slightest.
Right.
The fact are these guys are positioning themselves so they can be ready when it's time to make the announcements and run in the primary, that they have some kind of an advantage or at least the name recognition. I'll be quite honest. I think John Kasich is damaging himself with this presidential run, because there's a heck of a lot of people in the state who call themselves conservative that will never vote for him again, who really didn't understand what his record meant in the past. He balanced the budget and he did this and he did that. He's the real John Kasich is now making himself known, and he's making it known on a national platform, and it's not going to be endearing to the base, the conservative base of the Republican Party.
Well, especially when he just came out this last week, and there's a clip that's floating around in conservative circles. It was a media clip. I think John Kasich was at the University of Virginia, and I believe it was. He was in Virginia campaigning. Let me back that off. It maybe wasn't at the university, but he was in Virginia campaigning, and somebody asked him about same-sex marriage. And what he basically said was, or religious liberty, excuse me, they asked him about religious liberty. And he said, yeah, he's all in favor of religious liberty, but if somebody asks you to bake a cupcake, just do it. Get over it. In other words, he's okay to narrowly define religious liberty just inside the four walls of a church. But if you try to live your faith outside of that and say, I don't want to be involved in a homosexual wedding ceremony and bake their cake or provide their flowers or do their photography, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because I don't agree with that worldview, John Kasich's saying, get over it. You just need to do it. Because in a John Kasich world, your religious liberty only extends as far as the four walls of your church.
And
folks, you know, it's time for Ohioans and others to wake up. You know, this is where John Kasich lives. So if we think we're going to get religious liberty protections, you know, we've got bills in the legislature right now, had the Pastor Protection Act. That bill had a hearing and now it has not been scheduled again. I wonder why.
Yeah, big shock.
You know, we have another bill that actually hasn't even been scheduled for hearings that actually would protect the bakers and the florists and the photographers and others from being, threatened their livelihoods and their, you know, and everything that they hold dear, their businesses, et cetera, from these attacks by these radical progressivists and pro-homosexualists who want to ruin anybody who dares speak out in a faith way on the truth about homosexuality and the truth that it's sin and the truth that it is an abomination in the eyes of God and a truth that they do not have a responsibility to accommodate or to applaud or to celebrate sin. But in John Kasich's world, that bill's not moving anywhere, you know. And it couldn't be that, you know, the governor's off saying, well, you know, we're not going to sign anything like that. Well, maybe it is. Because in that unguarded moment, when he's talking off the cuff, he's basically shown you his cards. Yeah, you know, we might have to do something to keep the pastors and the churches mollified. But when it comes to everybody else out there, if you hold to a biblical worldview and you want to conduct commerce in Ohio, well, you got to basically compartmentalize. You have to put your faith on the shelf or keep it in your church.
Uh-huh.
Because you certainly cannot exercise it in public, in commerce. That's John Kasich's America, Chuck.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe this week we're earning the disclaimer they play on the end of our show. these aren't necessarily the views of the radio station.
Oh, no, absolutely not. These are our personal views.
These are definitely our personal views. We haven't felt any backlash from being so critical of the governor and the legislators that are propping him up. Man, don't kid yourself, ladies and gentlemen. Look really close at what your legislator is doing to prop up John Kasich, because it's going on all over the place. That doesn't mean everyone. We have a couple in this area that are very good about saying no to things like Medicaid expansion and those kinds of things that were going to usher John Kasich into the White House and instead are basically keeping him from doing well at all. Because nobody is a fan of Medicaid expansion, especially since it is a Obamacare. Let's not kid ourselves. Medicaid expansion was essentially tied to the money supposedly coming in from Obamacare. Now that Obamacare, I'm going to talk about this in terms of a friend that I have. Now okay. that Obamacare, the exchanges are collapsing every place. I'm hearing from people in the industry that are telling me something that I told them when this thing started to pass. I said that these exchanges are supposed to fail. They're designed to fail. And this person is involved in the industry in computer support, having to do with helping set up these exchanges and things. And their boss told them, and this is a private enterprise institution, their boss told them that Obamacare, these exchanges were designed to fail because the big plan has always been to try to go to single-party pay. When you hear that, that's a code phrase, single-party pay. Who's the single party, Barry?
That'd be the government.
The federal government, not the states.
Absolutely.
The states would be administrative districts. This is the Hamiltonian dream, by the way. The states become administrative districts for the feds, but basically the states would be wouldn't have any charge over the money. They would just be there as the distribution agent. So this is what John Kasich has been involved in, and not just John Kasich. I think if you'll look, there are a number of people I haven't heard too much about this, but they would people in the GOP establishment are applauding things like what John Kasich's doing because other governors did the same thing. A whole bunch of governors took the money. A whole lot of them who touted themselves as conservative took the money. And did the Medicaid exchange or did the Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, Chuck, I want to read something to you. I mean, this ties back into my rant just a minute ago, but it also ties into what you're saying. And this was a takeaway from Molly Hemingway on the Federalist website about last night's GOP debate in Houston because religious liberty issues came up. And here's how this reporter for the Federalist, this was what their takeaway was from the debate. Says Trump was asked about religious liberty and said nothing before moving on to discuss Chief Justice John Roberts and how much he doesn't like him. Cruz pointed out Trump has supported Joe Biden, Chuck Schumer, Harry Reid, and other politicians who oppose constitutional judges. Moderator Hugh Hewitt asked Trump if he could be trusted on religious liberty. He responded by insulting Cruz and asking him to apologize for pointing out his sister is a judge so radical in abortion that she supports partial birth abortion. Cruz said he'd never apologize for defending the Constitution. Trump ended up using completely discredited Planned Parenthood talking points about how few abortions they perform, and yet Trump's answer was somehow better than John Kasich's. Kasich was asked about religious liberty, and he said that he opposed it. He said citizens don't have religious liberty unless they're clergy or otherwise within the confines of a house of worship. He explicitly opposed conscience rights for people not working for a church. It was shameful. Folks, this is Molly Hemingway on what John Kasich actually said in the debate last night.
Yep.
And I'll be quite honest, I didn't bother watching the debate, Chuck. I hate watching these debates because, frankly, I know all you're getting is a bunch of pre-made talking points. But now what I'm starting to see is John Kasich is now the lion in winter. He has, I think maybe deep down, he's being honest with himself that he's in his lame duck term as governor. There's no way he's going to become president. And really, there's probably no way he's going to become vice president either. And so I think what you're seeing are cracks in the facade. And John Kasich, and the real John Kasich is starting to shine through. Folks, okay, again, he said he opposes religious liberty, and you don't have religious liberty rights unless you're a clergyman or within the confines of a house of worship. Chuck, okay, anybody who still supports John Kasich is basically saying they're okay with the balkanization of people of faith.
Yeah, exactly. Get in your churches and stay there and don't come out. And Lord forbid that anybody would actually allow their religious beliefs to affect any kind of policy decision. Now, one thing I will say about John Kasich is he has been touting a form of Christianity called progressive Christianity. In other words,
right, or social justice. God.
Social justice. Jesus was a socialist. Okay, you cannot come to that conclusion, because if you read the Old Testament, and who is the person who gave us the Old Testament? It was the Father through the Son. And, you know, by him all things were made, John 1. And here's the deal. The Old Testament is a free enterprise economic and ethical economic system.
Yes, it is.
In other words,
absolutely
fair weights and measures. Don't steal. You know, don't cheat people. Don't have two prices, one for one set of people and one for another set of people. It's amazing to me that a biblical free enterprise system has been twisted into, well, Jesus wanted to use the power of government, the power of the sword, to confiscate and redistribute wealth. Sorry, that's not in the Bible, Barry. It's not there. And they will always cite Acts and also Jesus talking about, you know, give up all your world, sell all your worldly goods and follow me. Well, if you'll note, first of all, that was being told to the rich young ruler. And the rich young ruler, Jesus divinely discerned that this man had major problems with the worship of mammon, money. He was all about his fine clothes and his jewelry and his fine houses and that kind of thing. And that's the primary thing of his life. And he said, you know, he came to Jesus and said, I've always kept all the commandments. Well, that's nonsense. In fact, he broke one by making that statement. And in the book of Acts, they talk about the socialism that the early church lived under. Well, it wasn't socialism. It was a community sharing, something we all do in our churches. When we have someone in need in our church, we all come together and we put into the pot so that person can have the things that they have to have. They can have medical treatment they can't afford. They can buy groceries or heat when they're out of a job. And their electricity, when their electricity is in danger of being shut off because they've lost a job or something like that. That is living in community. That's not socialism. Socialism is using the power of the sword to confiscate that which God has given, the largesse that God has given, to give to someone else for the simple virtue of the fact that you have more than they do. No, the Bible is very clear. That's a voluntary act.
Yeah. Chuck, I'm going to send this over to you. I want you to see this. You know, you're absolutely right on what you're talking about, but I want you to see this because there's a link here from the debate last night, CNN, and I think that it's actually very telling. Let me forward this over to you,
okay.
and if you can pull this link up, I would hope that we could. This is John Kasich talking about his view on religious liberty. I mean, now, taking it straight from the horse's mouth.
Okay, we have to discuss this next week because we are way out of time.
Oh, my. Okay, well, you know what, ladies and gentlemen? Go to our website. We'll put that link
up. Yeah.
You go look at it yourself, and you see that the fact that... And John Kasich became combative when Hugh had asked him this question about religious liberty and started talking about appointing Supreme Court justices, something John Kasich doesn't do in Ohio because we elect judges
right.
in Ohio. We don't let the governor appoint them. So anyhow, just food for thought, Chuck. And
yep.
I know as we're out of time, folks, a lot of things are going on. Next week when we come back, we'll be talking about the Super Tuesday swing and other things that are happening or not happening in Ohio, as it seems like our legislature may be shutting down between now and March 15th in order to get out there and support John Kasich's quixotic bid for, I don't know, vice president, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. Please be in a house of worship tomorrow of your choice. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.